I hope they're right. They got to get their act together. They got to be more objective. You got to have the sauerkraut. You got to have the good brown mustard, maybe corn, you know, maybe beans, whatever. I could write a memoir. Forget about that. That's crazy.
Buccaneers fans, here he is, the mighty sage of Tampa Bay sports, the Baron of Big Storm Beer himself, Mr. Bill Curry Ford, Ira Kaufman, the king of Newport Richie, Uncle Ira. Sage, I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. Lee DeKemper of JoeBucksFan is here. And all the fun is presented by Bill Curry Ford. Ira, you know what they got going on now? GM Sean Sullivan, if you get a price from a Ford dealership on a vehicle, another Ford dealership, and you come to him, if he can't beat it, he's going to give you $500 cash. Just that simple. That's how confident he is in their ability to give you the best possible price. All the information at BillCurryFord.com. And, of course, you can get there through JoeBucksFan.com. Bill Curry Ford, nationwide lifetime warranty on all new vehicles. You can order a new vehicle, no deposit. Sean will give you $500 just to do that. And, of course, great prices, pre-owned, fantastic July 4th weekend sales. This is a great time to buy. BillCurryFord.com. C-U-R-R-I-E, that's the family name, Bill Curry Ford, 65 plus years in Tampa. They are fantastic. Ask for Sean, and when you talk to him, you'll get an Ira Kaufman discount on top of that. You just have to mention the Sage. It's just that easy, and we thank Big Storm Beer, the official beer of the Ira Kaufman podcast. Big Storm Beer, the Bromosa, the Wavemaker, Amber Ale, Tropic Pressure, Golden Ale, so many greats. And you can find them in the stores at the Tap Rooms, where they have their award-winning spirits. Tap Rooms are in Cape Coral in Orlando at the Amway Center. And just because it's at the Amway Center doesn't mean it's only open for events. It is open all the time, easy access in and out. And the flagship location in Clearwater on 49th Street, just south of Ulmerton, in Pasco County, off State Road 54 on Success Drive. Nice little place up there. The Sage frequents, as he is the king of Newport Richie. And Ybor City Live Music, great menu at all locations, Big Storm Ybor, Centro Ybor, upstairs. That's where you will find the tap rooms on the second floor. Sage, exciting times, and of course, storm season is here. Florida's EliteRestoration.com. We'll talk about them later. Put them in your favorites. Read their website. So when you have flood damage, storm damage, any kind of water damage, mold, fire, you know who to call. To get a free assessment of what's happening, call them first before you call your insurance company, Florida's EliteRestoration.com. Ira, it's the summertime of year. Years ago, you told us about life in Brooklyn on July 4th with cherry bombs and ash cans and all the tough guy kids in your neighborhood blowing things up. Was any of that exaggerated, Ira?
No, the guy's name was Joey Lobianco. You can't make up a name like that. Joey Lobianco, his sister was gorgeous, gorgeous. But nobody could go near her because, you know, Joey's going to throw a trash can over your head if you come within 50 feet of his sister.
What was her name?
Carolyn Lobianco. And the guy lived right across the street, right across the street. You'd see him all the time. And then come July 4th, you know, the guy would stuff his car with ash cans, cherry bombs, M80s. Forget about firecrackers. Firecrackers aren't going to get it done, Lee. These things, they can do a lot of damage. You know, you can't make up a name like Lobianco. That doesn't come right to your mind. And by the way, Steve, you were talking about Bill Curry Ford. Lee, I've never seen a guy so eager to give out money than Sean Sullivan. Never.
First thing that comes to mind is, why would you go to a different Ford dealership? That's number one.
They must meet every Monday morning, him and his crew, and say, all right, what kind of new initiatives are we going to do this week? At the dealership, they're always coming up with something. Take advantage of his extravagance. Sean Sullivan, general manager. And by the way, the man knows his football, Steve.
Ira, I got to ask you about this Lobianco. Don't tell me the next chapter in this book is he went to Hollywood and his starlet girlfriend got knifed by Charles Manson.
No, that wasn't him. That was Billy Kornberg. We had a guy named Billy Kornberg. You know, we got all kinds of crazies, Lee, growing up in Brooklyn. I could write a memoir just on the Brooklyn days. I don't know what the hell I would call the thing. But looking back, I didn't realize it at the time. We had a ball. Back in those days, Lee, I had a schoolyard across the street. My elementary school was across the street with a big schoolyard, basketball courts, stick ball, wiffle ball. And you go out and, you know, your parents didn't worry about where the hell you were. You know, you're coming back at 6:30 for dinner. Those were the days, Lee. Things have changed. Yeah,
I know. A little fun tidbit about Ira. You were classmates, fifth grade classmates with Bernie Sanders back in the day.
He's even older than me, Steve, if you can believe it. The biggest alumni from New Utrecht High School was Buddy Hackett, the comedian. Buddy Hackett.
All right, Ira. One thing that was kind of interesting, Ira, and really shocked me, and I was very pleased by the shock, was Tristan Wirfs appeared for 45 minutes on a Vikings podcast, a Vikings fan podcast, not even a big one. He did a sit down with his Vikings podcast. So that was pretty cool to catch something like that in late June. So one thing that came out of that, Ira, I want to get your wisdom on it, and it was sort of encouraging, was that Wirfs basically said he did so much pass protection with the Bucs, and it was such really a focus of the offense over the last 3 years, the first 3 years of his career, that he believes he's a better pass blocker than he is a run blocker. He wouldn't have said that coming out of college, and he's looking forward to dialing in on the running game and essentially improving his game and getting even better, and he's an all-pro. What's your thought about that, Ira? It was sort of an interesting take.
You know, Tristan Wirfs is a treasure. I know you guys wrote a story today about, how blessed the Bucs are to have receivers like Evans and Godwin who are not divas. Well, you look at Tristan Wirfs. Lee, I think one of the things that the Bucs have to be wary of is not to trot, Wirfs out in front of the podium 3 days a week, because the guy never says no. He's willing to do what. And the guy's good, Lee. He's good. You know, he doesn't talk in cliches necessarily. And he's feeling his oats, Lee. And why shouldn't he? I mean, the guy's a great player. He's the best player on the Buccaneers. I don't have any question about saying it. That's no knock on Evans and Godwin, Lavonte David. Tristan Wirfs is the best Buccaneer. And his best days might be ahead of him. And, Lee, something you always talked about for the last 2 or 3 years, and I think with some validity. They've had such troubles running the ball, Lee, but they didn't seem to run it behind Wirfs. And we really didn't understand that, Lee, especially on third and short. Why are you going over, left tackle? Why are you going over left guard without Marpet? We didn't understand that.
Yeah, exactly.
Now Wirfs is going to be on the left side with Filer. To me, that's the side you run to. We don't know about, the right tackle situation. The right guard's going to be a rookie. Jensen's coming back from injury. I like Wirfs, feeling more confident about this team. He also had some things to say about how well the Bucs are going to play this season. But don't wear him out, Lee. He's such a fun guy. I don't want to wear that guy out.
I'm a little surprised Wirfs isn't giving himself enough credit. He said two things that I found perplexing. One, he said he thinks he's a better pass blocker because the Bucs passed a lot, which is true with Arians. And I recall vividly late in the 2020 season, someone mentioned, we couldn't be in person because of the virus. Everything had to be Zoom. And they happened to have a Zoom shot of Arians. His face filled the screen. And someone asked him about Wirfs and his blocking. And Arians had this cat ate the canary smile. And he said, yeah, we get a lot of push on the right side when we run there. So that I vividly remember him saying that. That's why I can quote him directly. And, that tells me they loved Wirfs run blocking. The second thing is, this should not have come as a surprise to Wirfs, really. He's a smart guy. he comes from probably the worst slash best, depending on your point of view, ground and pound team in the country, Iowa. Kirk Ferentz is borderline. I think he breaks out in hives if he passes the ball three times a quarter. And with the possible exception of, at the time, with the possible exception of Tennessee, no team ran the ball as much as Iowa. So surely he had to know, being a bright guy that he is, that he was going to pass block more than he did at Iowa. So I don't know. I don't think he's giving himself enough credit, number one. Number two, I just think he's being humble. You know, he's mostly a humble guy, and I think he was just being humble.
You know, Steve, the facts are over once Brady arrived, Steve. And it hasn't really changed. It's changed very, very little over the three-year period. Steve, the Bucs basically threw the ball on two-thirds of their snaps. 1 year it was 67%. 1 year it was 66%. 1 year it might have been 68%. But very, very consistent. And they had Tom Brady, to Lee's point. And you got Tom Brady, you throw the football. I don't disagree. So that, I think those are the numbers that Wirfs is referring to. And we noticed Wirfs more on pass protection. I mean, that's natural. And from the start, 2020, the guy was fantastic. For a rookie to have that kind of technique, you know, that kind of balance and that kind of power and athleticism, we've never seen that before, I don't think, in Tampa. What a blessing. I voted for him first team All-Pro, Steve, as a rookie. That doesn't happen. So I don't think they're going to throw the ball two-thirds of the time. I'm sorry, Lee.
No.
Sorry.
Hey, here's a good stat for you, Ira. I came across it this week, and I know this will unnerve you. I'm not trying to unnerve you, but unnerve you. It equally proved a point of yours that you beat the drum about and equally shot down your point.
All right.
Tom Brady, and I don't have the figures of ballpark figure here. Tom Brady, when throwing the ball 50 times a game, had like a .690 win percentage.
Lee, that's not necessarily better than his overall percentage, which was phenomenal.
The point was, you throw too much, you're going to lose. Brady was like .690. It was something exceptional when he threw 50 times or more a game.
Yes.
And that includes playoffs. That includes playoffs. All games.
Okay.
When you add up all the quarterbacks in the history of the NFL who threw for 50 times a game, the win percentage is like .380.
You're making my point, Lee, for the 2023 Bucks. They don't have Brady.
When Brady threw 50 times a game in the playoffs, he had something like .600 winning percentage. All other quarterbacks who threw 50 times a game in the playoffs, .190 win percentage.
Steve, once again, Brady's the outlier, and I know what Lee's saying about, you know, smacking down my point, but also forcing my point. Steve, without Brady and with Canales in the house, and I think Bowles being more assertive, I don't think I'm going out on a limb, Steve, saying that the Bucs might throw the ball 55% of the time instead of 67% of the time.
I don't think it's smart to have Baker Mayfield throwing the ball up 30, 35 times a game or more.
Yeah.
Well, Sage, couple of things. On the Tristan Wirfs angle, I took it more of as a development thing. I mean, he's still a young player. And if the Buccaneers' focus for 3 years was not running the ball, and, you know, a lot of times they'll talk about the mentality of running the ball and just the focus of the offense, and obviously they were doing a ton of passing, maybe he still has a fair amount of, you know, high-level development ahead of him or improvement, even though he's excellent, improvement in the run game, which is kind of exciting, you know, because we forget sometimes that he is a young, developing player, and now here he goes to a new position, and he's going to run block more. So I don't know. I thought it was kind of exciting. I did look up the Iowa numbers when I wrote that post. They ran the ball just about 60% of the time, which, of course, is one of the higher ones in the country for a top-level program. So interesting stuff from Wirfs. He did talk about how comfortable he is and through minicamp and just how great he's feeling at left tackle and was really looking forward to the hitting end of it and, you know, how that may affect him, you know, so he can judge himself that way. But
didn't he say that the Bucs were going to win 12 games or something?
He did. They asked him, what's your prediction for the Bucs? And he thought about it, and I was just proud Because I think 9 out of 10 players would have said, oh, one game at a time, man. Or, oh, the goal is to win the NFC South or this. Not a lot of players would sit back, take a breath, think about it and say, and put a win total on it. So, yeah, he said 12-5 for the Bucks, and hey, why not, right?
Well, you know what that tells me? First of all, about his confidence, which I love, but equally as importantly, the guy is willingly assuming the leadership role on this team, a leadership role. You know, you've always, you know, you got some strong veterans in David and Evans Jensen, but I don't think Wirfs would have said anything like that, you know, a couple of years ago. And he's no dummy. He sees how often the Bucks trot him out in front of that podium, and I don't blame the Bucks. You know, the guy's always positive. He's polished. He's impressive in public. I think he's assuming his role very willingly as a spokesman for this team. It's amazing that a guy that young can be thrust into that kind of role. And, of course, Lee, you got to back it up with your play, and there's no question that he does that.
Well, you know me, that's a superfluous subject. So I,
he says 12 and 5, Lee. Anyway, they go 12-5.
Do it then. I mean, I'm not knocking the guy. You know I love Christian Wirfs, but this leadership cock, can we talk to something with relevance and substance?
Well, Lee, you know, you and Isbitz are the leads of Joe Bucks fan. That counts for something.
We're leads because when we own the damn thing, number two, bury everybody else, and we got the stats to prove it.
We're flight confidence over there, DeKemper.
I think a 53-man football team is a little different than Joe Bucks fan. Just a little. Sage, I have a feeling, I just want to put it out there because you guys were talking about it. I just think the Bucks are going to throw the ball a lot more than most people think. One, because ultimately every offensive coordinator, no matter what he says, he's looking for the best possible play. And if, it's a big if, but maybe it's not that big of an if, considering none of them are over 30. If Evans, Godwin, and Gage are healthy, I think they're going to throw the ball a lot because they're going to see there's a mismatch out there. You know, two of those three guys have not been healthy. So I don't know. I just think they may throw a little more than people think, especially if the run game isn't working, which was part of the issue last year. And I hate to say it, I don't think the Bucks are going to be 12-5, and if they're trailing in some of these games, that often leads you to throw the ball more.
Yeah.
We have to be realistic. The teams that are on top of the rushing stats, like Philly and the Bears, Lee, I mean, a big part of that is they have running quarterbacks. That's a big part of it. You know, it's not like they're handing the ball to Miles Sanders 300 times in Philadelphia last year, you know, but they gained a ton of running yards. And, you know, when you got Jalen Hurts, it's going to pad that total. You got Justin Fields, it's going to pad that total. And there's some other teams, you know, like Baltimore, when Lamar Jackson is healthy. So, Lee, I'm never going to say that the Bucks are turning into a running team. But as you mentioned, when you get Mayfield above 35, 40 pass attempts, I don't like that formula. I don't like
it. Yeah, you know, we go round and round about this. Of course, I'd love to throw the ball, provided you have a quarterback. I don't disagree with what Steve is saying, but just look at Mayfield's history. Do you want the ball? Do you want the ball in the air that often? Number one. Number two, do you trust him to do that? I don't know, man. In a perfect world, in a vacuum, I'd love for him to throw 45 times a game. I don't know if that's smart. Again, it's not Brady. It's not Mahomes. It's not Burrow. You know, we're talking about Baker Mayfield, a career 60% completion percentage guy. That's basically what his career is. You look at his career, the median is pretty much 60% about Mayfield in the offense. But there was a New York Post story about Mayfield. I guess he did some kind of press conference for some dumb golf thing. And there was only two minor references that this reporter used about the Bucks and Mayfield. It was mostly about, you know, him and his struggles with his career. Just two small references about the Bucks. But in his second quote about the Bucks, he said this offense, Canales' offense, you know, outside of the huddle of the first team offense, nobody really knows what this is going to look like. Mayfield said it's very much like Sean McVay's. Which makes sense, because Canales worked with the Sean McVay protege up in Seattle for a couple of years.
And to Steve's point about you know, it's not going to be ground and pound. And it's not, Steve, you know, because the Seattle example, they've always had two good receivers. They get 1,000-yard receivers in Seattle. It's not like they, even when they had Marshawn Lynch, they got production, the Doug Baldwins of the world. And by the way, Steve, one more thing. And I always go back to Mayfield's, you know, season in the sun, 2020. Heck of a year for Cleveland. They hadn't done anything for 20 years. They win 11 games. They win a playoff game. Steve, he had two good backs that year. He had two good backs. Yeah, you know, he had Chubb and Hunt, I believe. They gained a lot of yards between them, Steve, and he averaged 30 pass attempts that season. I'm not saying it's got to be a carbon copy, but I think the Buck defense is at least as good as the 2020 Browns. So that could be a winning formula. The problem is the Bucks don't have Nick Chubb.
Or Miles Garrett.
Or Miles Garrett.
Yep. Sage, Lee wrote something the other day about quarterback hits. Devin White led the Bucs in quarterback hits last year. Not very often that a middle linebacker blitzing was going to do that. And Tryon Shoyinka was second. I think Logan Hall and another guy, six quarterback hits. I think it was Anthony Nelson. And that's kind of not much production from your edge in quarterback hits. However, if you look at the total number of quarterback hits per team, the Bucs were around 11th or 12th in the league, which is good, obviously. So, yes, Bowles wants the edge rush, and that's why they won the Super Bowl, because they were able to just rely on that edge rush and do more things with the defense. But do you think they really have to have it? Because it is a little bit unrealistic to all of a sudden think the Bucs' edge rushers are going to be lights out. Hopefully Shaq Barrett can come back at some point and be pretty good. That might not be till the second half of the season. What are your thoughts on the pass rush? Yes, we've talked about how Bowles is a master at scheming it up, but do you think they can survive and actually have a good season without a beastly edge rusher?
I'm glad you brought that up, Steve. I am. Lee, looking back at the 2022 Buck defense, in terms of the pass rush, Lee, in terms of sacks, just sacks, which I call drive killers for the most part. They're drive killers. That's why they're so important. You know, it's second and 17, and it's gonna, you know, it's hard to get a first down. It's third and 14, it's hard to get a first down. If you drop that quarterback, you should be able to kill off that drive. And there's only 11, 12 drives in a game. So it's big. Lee, when you look back at what Bowles did, not as a head coach, Lee, not as a head coach, but as the guy that oversees that defense, and you see that the Bucs had 47, 48 sacks, which ranked pretty high in the league. You know, it wasn't 22nd in the league. It's a good number, Lee, and it's a consistent number since he's been here for 4 years running that defense. Very, very consistent. 47 sacks, 48 sacks, 45, 46. But, Lee, last year in particular, I mean, that's a hell of a testament to Bowles. Man, just think about it. Shaq Barrett missed half the year, and, Lee, he really hadn't done much before that. He had 3 sacks, Lee, in 8 games. That's not Shaq Barrett. Joe Tryon didn't improve. Logan Hall, minimal contributions. Akeem Hicks, in and out of the lineup. Will Golston, not much of a factor on a pass rush. Devin White, not much, you know, in terms of sacks compared to his past production. But they come up with 47, 48 sacks. I mean, I don't know if he could do it again. If Shaq Barrett doesn't come back in a big way, if Logan Hall and Joe Tryon don't develop in their young seasons, I don't know that he can keep doing it, Lee. I really don't know how the hell he did it last year. You know what he did? He spread the wealth. Everybody chipped in. That's what he did.
How much did that? And I'm not saying the Bucs had a lousy defense last year. They didn't. They wore down as the season went on, I think. I think December, yes. I believe that was pretty evident against the Cowboys and the 49ers. How much of a factor, the spreading the wealth, you're talking about, Ira? If Bowles didn't have to focus so much on creating and manufacturing ways to try to get pressure on a quarterback, when he can use guys in other areas, as opposed to, okay, I got to have Devin White rush the passer, I got to have this guy, I got to have that stunt. If he could use guys in other responsibilities rather than, you know, focusing so much effort to find a way to get to the quarterback because he's getting zero production virtually from his edge rushers, how much would that help the defense out just to have a consistent edge rusher?
That's a hell of a point, Lee. That's a hell of a point. When you got somebody like Nick Bosa, even an inside guy like Chris Jones or Aaron Donald, you work around them, and it's a tremendous, you know, starting point. And the Bucks don't have that. When you have that, that's the guy that draws the attention, and you work off that. They don't have that. They don't have a guy, Lee, that's demanding a double team, except maybe Vita Vea. And he, you know, he led the team in sacks, and it's not really what Bowles wants. He'll take it because nobody else stepped up. But, Lee, you're making a great point. One of these terrors off the edge, it really opens up your defensive playbook. And the Bucks don't have it right now, and that's why Bowles has to mix and match. And I think he had, Lee, eight guys maybe with at least three sacks. I'm not sure another team had spread the wealth like that.
Sage, I wanted to ask you a couple of questions here. And one, it may seem trivial, but, you know, this is the time of year where we have to think about this thing. And it does apply a little bit to personnel and what they may do before training camp. But I want to remind everybody, Bill Curry Ford, C-U-R-R-I-E, that's the family name, right there on Dale Mabry, north of the stadium in Tampa, BillCurryFord.com. Get shopping there today. So many 0% financing offers. It's going to blow your mind. BillCurryFord.com. Ira, Kate Otten is there, the top tight end, second-year guy. And then you've got Payne Durham, the rookie out of Purdue, and Co-Kieft, not really a fourth tight end right now, but the tight end's coach, Ira, is a guy named Van Dam, and he didn't play tight end. He doesn't have a lot of tight end coaching experience at all, and it doesn't feel like he's the best possible tight end coach they could have found if they went hunting this offseason, and they don't have a veteran in there. And I think when you start to look at little ways that they can improve, it almost feels like, you know, it would be great if they could get a veteran tight end in here who is willing to play for the minimum, who can block and maybe can't do too much else anymore, to try to lead these guys, because it does matter. I mean, you talk to any of these players in a position group, to have a guy that can show them some little things, film-wise, whatever, just those little aspects of leadership that are more coaching-related that can really help. What are your thoughts there, guys?
You're reading my mind there, Steve, because I was looking at the tight end position the other day. One thing I want to mention off the top, I talked about Mayfield's play with the Browns when he was having some success. He likes to throw to the tight end, Lee. He likes it. He had Njuko. He had Austin Hooper. They had production, the Browns did, at tight end under Mayfield. I'm looking at the tight end group, Lee, and I kind of think about them the way I look at the running backs. I think they're a little short, Lee. I do. Steve talks about veteran leadership. One thing I look at a tight end that's lacking, Steve, they don't have any speed, Lee. There's no speed in the tight end group. Payne Dora might be a good red zone threat, but not because he's going to get separation, but because he might be able to outleap a guy at his height, and he's got pretty good hands. I think that tight end group might need some help. You know, Otten was okay as a rookie. Not bad. I thought he gained, Brady's trust, which, is quite exemplary for a rookie. But that tight end group's not scaring anybody. To me, I think they need some help there, and I still think they need another running back.
I don't disagree. Otten had an okay rookie year for a tight end, but I also have to factor in that rarely do rookie tight ends make an impact. You know, like you said, he got Brady's trust, which says a lot. I'm hoping he makes a big next step. I really am. But I'm kind of like you. Until they prove otherwise, the tight ends from the Bucks right now are eh. I don't know if they're average. I really don't.
And Steve, I can just hear, a long-time Buck diehard say that, wait a minute. Gronkowski wasn't exactly running a 4.5 40. Steve, that's Gronkowski. I mean, Gronkowski's a first ballot Hall of Famer, and he had all the attributes in the world to get around. You know, his speed was okay for an NFL tight end. It wasn't great. Gronkowski's one of a kind.
You don't need a ton of speed at tight end. It's nice to have. It's fantastic to have. But, I mean, Gronk averaged 14.3 yards a catch as a Buccaneer. I mean, you can't put anybody in that league or that class. I'm a little higher on Otten than you guys are. I think he actually had a good season last year, as a rookie tight end goes. If he had a similar kind of season this year, 50 catches, 600 yards, 4 touchdowns, something like that, I think that's actually pretty good. I mean, the guy was a first pick of the fourth round, and if he improves his blocking a little, which he probably should. But you mentioned running back, Ira. I mean, running backs, like Lee has said many times, and it's true, running backs jump into the league and kick ass all the time. Doug Martin did it with the Bucs, LeGarrette Blount, others. Tight ends don't usually do that. And, you know, they need a little bit more development. You just feels like having a veteran around and maybe they're a little lacking in the coaching department there. I think that would be a good thing. And maybe they're looking at that. Maybe they're going to see, hey, these three guys could get cut. You know, this guy, these two would play for the minimum. We'll bring him in here. I don't know, Ira, but I think it's a possibility, and it would be an all-in kind of move. Not that a third string tight end is an all-in move, but those subtle little moves that you say you're really trying to win, that could be one of them.
You know, if Dorm can catch four or five touchdown passes as a rookie, and then you figure Otten's going to get four or five, that's pretty darn good production if they can do that.
Sure. Now, you mentioned running backs that you thought were lacking along with tight ends. And I've gone over the, you know, running backs and Rashad White over and over and over, and probably will for the next two or three weeks until training camp begins. The fact that Light did not go out and get a running back, sorry, I'm not counting Chase Edmonds. I'm more interested in Jim Edmonds and his drama with his nannies than I am Chase Edmonds. But the fact that Light ignored running back in the draft when that draft was loaded with running backs, is that indirectly a major slap at Leftwich? We know Light got up at the podium at the combine and gave, you know, a testament to Snake Vaughn. But the fact that Light said, no, we're good at running back, is that a major indirect slap in the face to Leftwich, basically saying this guy didn't know how to develop a running back, this guy didn't know how to use running backs?
Well, you could also see it, Lee, as a slap at the O-line coach, because I think when the season ended, Steve, and they tried to evaluate Rashad White, and they saw that Leonard Fournette didn't run the ball any more effectively than White did, and they decided, I think, by consensus, the biggest problem with our running game is not from the running backs. It's not like the holes were there, and they didn't execute. I think the conclusion was, Steve, the offensive line run blocking was terrible. Guys were getting hit before they started. You can't blame that on Rashad White. And for whatever reason, they seem to have tremendous confidence in White, who had less than 500 rushing yards, right, Steve? Less than 500. And they think he's going to double it this year with better blocking in front of him. I hope they're right.
The only catch that you're saying, Ira, it makes sense. The only catch is they kept the offensive line coaches. They got rid of Leftwich.
But they changed the personnel. They did change the personnel. Yeah.
If you remember, guys, I don't have the quote in front of me, but Bowles basically admitted that he tried to get rid of the offensive line coaches, but he said something like, well, you know, the guy I wanted, or what we were looking at, isn't always available. And I don't have the quote, but Bowles basically strongly implied that he had another choice for offensive line, but he kept these guys because he couldn't get his top choice. I'll pull that up for next podcast just because it was quite a stunner at the time, if you remember. But I don't know. I think maybe Light just simply, and his scouts simply, they decided, okay, we think these six running backs are better than Rashad White, or these five running backs are better than Rashad White in the draft. And if we can't get one of them, then we're sticking with Rashad White. And I think they might have just stuck to their evaluation.
Look, they see Rashad White every day in practice, Lee. We don't. And Jason Light drafted him, and Jason Light wants Rashad White to succeed. We shall see. The odd man out is Keyshawn Vaughn. You know, some people think he could get cut. I don't think he will get
cut. What? Who thinks?
And I think Bowles likes Vaughn. Lee, I think Bowles wants to see more of Vaughn.
He's got a funny way of showing it. He could get on the headset and told Leftwich, look, pal, you're playing him. My call.
Yeah.
I'm coach.
I would have bet $100 Lee was going to say he's got a funny way of showing it.
I think he had 17 carries, Steve. I mean, that's absurd. That's crazy.
Well, I don't think Keyshawn Vaughn is getting cut, Ira. I don't know where you're hearing that. I know you're all over TikTok and doing your thing there.
I'm reading too much social media, guys. Too much.
But Vaughn is actually in the best spot of his career. I mean, hey, a run-first guy comes in as an offensive coordinator, and he's the number two guy. I mean, this is as good as it gets for Keyshawn Vaughn. Obviously, Light's excited about it, and we'll see, Sage. the first podcast of this week, Ira and I just simply, I took fan questions off the website in a very tight window, and Ira answered them. Sage gave his thoughts on training camp. I'll give Lee a chance to open up his rant here on training camp. But first, Ira, I wanted to just give you two more questions that we didn't get to. One of them is about the media, and one of them is about the roster. Which one do you want first?
The media, one of my favorite topics, the media.
The question is, Sage, is the Tampa Bay media soft when it comes to the Bucks? It sure seems that way and feels that way. What is your opinion, Ira, and why, if that's actually happening?
Boy, what a sharp observer. What a sharp questioner, Steve. Yeah, it's soft. I'm not saying we got to be New York and Philly, but it's soft. And I read everything, and I look around, and I see when you add it all up, and I'm not talking about Buccaneers.com, Lee. I mean, they get a pass. Their checks are signed by the Glazers. Nobody's questioning Scott Smith, you know, of the Bucks, or Casey Phillips. That you know, they're exempt from this rant. But people whose checks aren't signed by the Buccaneer organization, they got to get their act together. They got to be more objective. We're not rooting for the Bucks to fail here, Lee. I'm not saying that. But to build them up as a team with no flaws, and the draft picks have been tremendous for the last 2 or 3 years, and look at all the talent up front on this offensive line. Lee, we don't know about Filer. We don't know about Mark. We don't know about Jensen. And I'm assuming that Wirfs makes a successful transition to left tackle. I'm pretty confident that he will. But, Lee, you read some of these other sites, you listen to some of these other podcasts, Lee, and we don't make a habit of doing it, and it's like everybody's on a Buck payroll. We're not. And I think, you know, and I know you guys are humble about it, and you don't really want to talk about it too much, but we give you the good and the bad. Now, 2020 and 2021, you know, well, what could you say in a negative sense? There wasn't much, and we did. Last year, they had a losing record with Tom Brady. It was not a good season. I don't care if they won the title or not. That was not a successful season for the Bucks.
That same question was posed to people who work at One Buck Palace. They would kill me for being negative.
Nobody's rooting for the Bucks to fail, Steve. Nobody. But you got to have credibility with your audience, and I think that's a big factor in the success of Joe Buck's fan.
You know, hey, there's a lot of ways to interpret soft. You know, I can't interpret that for somebody. I will say there's a lot of questions that aren't asked, and just point to Byron Leftwich, you know, in general, and it's nobody's fault per se, but in general, I think a Super Bowl offensive coordinator leaves a team in most cities. There's a drill down to find out exactly why that happened and what the players think and all that, and that didn't happen here. That's just one example, in my opinion. Ira, storm damage, flooding, fire, they strike when you don't want them to. There are no rules. You need to know who to call when that happens. That is Florida's Elite Restoration. Floridaseliterestoration.com is where you can find them and learn about them in advance so you know who to call and who you're calling. We love them. They're fantastic. They service the whole Bay Area. They are family-owned. They've got all the top technology in order to make sure that your property is properly assessed. And they'll work with your insurance company directly so you know you have an offensive coordinator, a defensive coordinator fighting against all the corruption that the insurance companies can deliver. Florida's Elite Restoration. Call them 24/7. They'll respond. That includes on the holiday weekend. Do not hesitate. Floridaseliterestoration.com. The other question on the roster, Ira, is regarding the trade deadline. And this reader says, or listener says, Sage, you are the man. You're the best. I love you. I don't know what else to say. That's how he opens up his email, Ira.
He's won me over already, Steve. He's won me over.
And then he goes on to say, don't mention Mike Evans because I can't bear the thought of him being traded. But what Buccaneers do you believe legitimately would be on the trade block if the team doesn't start too well and the deadline is the end of October?
Well, the answer to that, Lee, is who would other teams be interested in? That's the number one factor. If you're looking at, trading Joe Tryon, you're not going to get anything. And if Joe Tryon's playing well, you don't want to get rid of him.
Exactly.
Forget about that. As hard as it is to say it, Lee, as hard as it is, but you'd have Levante David. Maybe a team could use him for a year or two, a contending team. We're talking about contending teams trying to come in and pluck away players that they think could put them over the top. And while the Bucks are accumulating assets, maybe towards the 2024 draft. That's what it's all about, Lee, at that point, if things are going haywire. So the answer is, now he doesn't want to hear Mike Evans, but he's the number one guy. Nobody wants to see Mike Evans walk out the door at One Buck Place, but Mike Evans would be coveted. He's only 30 years old, Lee. He's not 35. He's only 30. And the right team, right quarterback, you know, Mike Evans is a Pro Bowl receiver. You got Devin White. I think teams look at Devin White and say, gee, with that speed, I think we can use this guy. I think we can develop him. Even though, Lee, if Todd Bowles can't, that doesn't say much for other teams' ability to do it. Antoine Winfield, I don't think he's going anywhere, Lee. I don't think he's going anywhere. So those are the guys that I'm thinking about. Godwin's younger than Evans, so I think Evans would go before Godwin. We don't want to think about it too much, Lee, because we don't want to think about a 2-6 start for this team.
What about 66?
I could see it, but the price, I think, for a wide receiver, an elite wide receiver, would be better, the package you can get. 66, I think, number one, you have to be playing at a strong level to silence any naysayers about his health. He's a possibility, although I don't think the Bucks have a natural fit to replace him. I know you're going to sell me Hainsey. Hainsey was okay, Lee. Okay. Just okay.
No, I'm not saying the Bucks have a replacement for Jensen, but I'm thinking about it. If you're going to rebuild and you got to stock assets, i.e. draft picks, and secondarily you're probably wanting to stock up draft picks to make a move for a quarterback, if they're playing lousy, I think that's obvious. You're not really worried about who's replacing someone. You're worried about, or at least you should be worried about, getting your next quarterback, and then you fill in the rest of the pieces.
Steve, you know what's curious? And I guess we shouldn't be surprised at this, but, and Lee mentions it all the time, and he writes about it all the time, so many national guys are already weighing in the off season. You know, we're a month away from training camp. They're already weighing in, a lot of them, and talking about the Bucks in the 2024 draft, Lee.
Well, screw them. It's too early for that. We hate those guys. Stop that.
Shoveling dirt in the Bucks' faces.
Can we wait to see what happens during the season?
Yeah, can we wait for opening day? I hate that stuff. I hate that. All right, on the trade front, I got to disagree with you all over the place here. First, every first-round pick gets a second shot, and there's always a sucker somewhere. And if a team who's in the hunt looks at Joe Tryon-Shoyanka, who's made some plays and likes his athleticism and thinks they can work with him and needs some help in their pass rush, the guy was a first-round pick. Somebody might cough up a late third-round pick, a really good team. So it's not crazy. I mean, Gaines Adams went for a second-round pick, and he didn't do much. So I think you could get a third- or fourth-round pick for Tryon-Shoyanka if somebody calls. Jensen, I was thinking that as well, Lee. I think Jensen, if a top team had an O-lineman go down, interior lineman, Jensen, he's not going to last here very long. That might be really high on the Bucks list. Yeah, well, who knows what they could get? It's not going to be a ton, but you'd get something. And I think the big money guy, Ira, the big score, if you were looking to retool for the draft, I think it's right in front of your face, is Vita Vea. Because Vita Vea is now going into his sixth year. Is it reasonable to think a guy at that size, most of them don't, a guy at that size is going to play 10 years in the NFL at a good level? This is his sixth year, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23. He's got a big contract. He's an impact player. And considering they just drafted Kancey, I think Vea is a guy, if they were looking to get a quarterback in the draft, that they may say, hey, we'll throw you Vita Vea for a first-round pick.
Boy, that'd be a tough one to swallow, Steve. Be a tough one. Lee, at this point, with Kancey not having played it down, you know, now look, things can change. Through 7 or 8 weeks if Kancey's the real deal. But right now, Lee, the thought of moving on from Vea, they don't have anything up front, Lee. They don't have anything up front. Vea's the guy holding the whole thing together. Leading sacker last year, 6.5, that's a strong total for an interior defensive lineman. Like Steve said, much depends on Kancey. Kancey'd have to be a hell of a rookie for me to think about the parting with Vita Vea.
Well, Steve made an excellent point, and there have been other observers, national observers, that sort of are saying the same thing. If the Bucks have a strength outside of wide receiver, and I, by the way, I think secondary is a hell of a strength. Not everybody agrees with me, but I do. I mean, I obviously agree with myself, but I'm just saying I think the secondary is probably going to be very good. Right. Interior defensive line, they got depth there because of the guys they added. Not just Kancy, but the guy from the Rams, and they moved. They had Logan Hall bulk up, so he's probably going to be interior. I think Steve's on to something there. That's not anti-Vea at all. It's just, you know, look at the value you can get for Vea.
I don't think you can get a first-round pick for him, Steve. I don't.
I think you might. Again, if it's a contending team that loses a piece, that is, they know, okay, we're going to have the 27th pick at best. You know, Vea's young enough. He's under contract. I don't know. I think it's a possibility. But, hey, none of us want to see that happen because we don't want the Bucks in trade mode. The trade deadline this year is actually Halloween, and we don't want all the fan base, all the fans everywhere, thinking draft, talking draft, players departing. Nothing would be more depressing than a crappy Bucks start. But I don't know. I think he's on the radio.
Steve, hold on. One more point. I want to throw this out at the Kemper for a second. Lee, tell me if this is a factor. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. If you go along with Steve's scenario, potential scenario, and you want to move Joe Tryon, and Steve said maybe you get a late third-round pick, maybe a fourth-round pick. Lee, if you're Jason Light, is that okay with you? You just drafted Tryon, and now you're not getting the value from where you drafted Tryon. That doesn't look that great in front of the Glazers if that would happen.
No, it doesn't, but you're looking at it in a vacuum, and I think Steve and I are looking at it in the big picture. If the Bucks are in trade mode come October, I think it's very fair to say they're probably also in quarterback mode, meaning they're going to have to draft a quarterback. And there are some quarterbacks out there. So you're looking at accumulating assets to possibly trade up. You know, you're trying to build up a war chest. And if you can get a third-round pick for Tryon, well, that helps sweeten a pot and a potential deal to trade up to get that quarterback.
That's a good point, Lee. And if you do get that quarterback, nobody's going to care about the Tryon trade.
Exactly. Now, Ira, I got a question for you. Did you know that Chris Godwin was 3 catches away from setting a team record for receptions last year in a season?
I saw your story, Lee. I did see your story. That is remarkable. It's an untold story about last season's Bucks. What a great year for Godwin. Now, Lee, the flip side is his average yards per catch were down. They were down. And I think that's Godwin's fault. Steve, I think that's a reflection of how quick Brady wanted to get rid of the football.
Across the team, the yards per catch were down. Some of that, yes, you know, clearly was Godwin's recovery and not having the same explosiveness and all that. I believe he missed 2 games, Lee, 2 games. It's an incredible number. When he broke 100, I remember we talked about it here and approaching Keyshawn. And I think Godwin sat out the last game when he could have had the record or maybe played very little. But it wasn't really that important to him. But I know the 100 mark at the time he had said that was important. And you know what an achievement. But again, I still come back to if he comes back 100%, which there's really not much reason why he wouldn't. And Mike Evans is Mike Evans, and you know if somehow they can freaking put crazy glue Russell Gage back together, I think they're gonna throw the ball a lot. I really do, and we don't necessarily. I know it's not a healthy thing for Mayfield to throw 40 times a game, but I think no one's gonna say, oh man, the Bucks, they're just ground and pound.
Well, it all comes down to Mayfield, right, Lee? It all comes down to Mayfield. Which Mayfield you're gonna get? You're going to get 2020 Mayfield. You're going to get 2022 Mayfield. He's been through a lot, Lee. I'm not betting against the guy. I don't think he's ever going to be great. But I think the guy could be pretty good.
Sage,
I'm going to flip the coin on this guy I was talking about trades. You know, if the Bucks are in trade mode. If Mayfield happens to have a career year, is Canales coming back?
Well, you mean not that he's going to be dismissed, but somebody's going to pluck him.
If he turns Mayfield around and Mayfield has a career year and the Bucks are passing, like Steve says, and they make the playoffs, is he a head coach somewhere next year?
I could see him being a head coach with a young quarterback that's either on the roster or a rookie quarterback that's drafted high on another team. I could see him being a very serious candidate for a head coaching job. And you know what? That's good, Lee, because it means the Bucs had a good season.
Yeah.
I understand how these things work, and the Bucs would say they don't want to stand in his way, but it really comes down to a paycheck. I mean, if the Glazers want to keep him, I'm sure Canales would have a price, and they would have to meet that price. So, I don't know. I mean, he is a young guy. He may be willing to stick it out if the price was right and not necessarily take an option that isn't the most appealing to him. I don't think a top team is going to take him. He would go to a rebuilding situation. I don't know.
Steve, I disagree with you there, and I'm glad I finally get to say I disagree because I've been agreeing with you too much, Isbitz. Now I think you're being a little naive, Steve. If a long-time assistant coach, even if he's got the title of OC at this point, that guy gets the opportunity to be a head coach, they're not going to turn that down.
Well, unless it's maybe the Cardinals or some dreadful ownership group.
Because I think the guy would have confidence in himself that he can be the guy to succeed as a head coach. The same thing with a general manager's job. You don't turn it down. Lee, remember when John Idzik went to the Jets and people said, you're nuts, you can't win there? Well, they were right. You know, 2-3 years later, he's out of a job, and it's tough for GMs to get another job, Lee. It's tough.
Losing GMs, yeah.
Yeah, losing GMs. And then John Idzik's son is on the Bucs staff, receivers coach.
I got one more for you before you head out to the beach and all the things that you're going to do on July 4th. Your hot dogs.
Steve, don't forget to get Lee's rant on training camp. Don't forget.
Oh, I didn't forget. I didn't forget at all. What's the over-under on hot dogs, Ira? Sauerkraut? What do you do with that?
You got to have the sauerkraut. You got to have the good brown mustard. Maybe corn, you know, maybe beans, whatever. But I'm looking forward to July 4th because I don't have to look over my shoulder at Joey Lobianco.
Do you have any good magazines at home for July 5th in the morning in the bathroom?
We're not going to get into that, Steve.
All right. Hey, Florida's Elite Restoration, floridaselite-restoration.com. Storm damage, bald, fire, flood. That is your first phone call, floridaselite-restoration.com. Check them out now so you're ready when disaster strikes. Bill Curry Ford, thank you again, Bill Curry Ford. Sean Sullivan, the GM. Call him, email him. Find him. He'll give you a discount. He'll guide you, which is most important, with a trusting voice. BillCurryFord.com. And the weekend is made for Big Storm Beer, Big Storm Brewery, spirits as well. BigStormBrewery.com. BigStormBrewery.com. Check out everything there from their menu to all the different beers. BigStormBrewery.com. Sage, let me yield to Lee here. Ira basically does not like what the Bucks did with one training camp practice open to the public, Monday, August 14th. Doesn't like it, thinks they could have done more. I'm kind of like, well, they did do more, and I don't like it, but I don't understand it at this point. There's a lot of nonsense, but I'm not too crazy about it. I know you're a little stronger about it. What I do want to point out to the fans is that it appears right now that the Buccaneers' first three practices, which will be Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, July 26th, 27th, and 28th, those are going to be the first three practices that typically are underwear football. And then the 29th would be a day off. And then Sunday, the 30th, is when the first practice is available to fans that are season ticket holders. So for some reason, I don't know why, and I'm guessing, Ira, and I want both of your opinion on this, I'm guessing that's something from the head coach, that maybe they don't want fans there the first 3 days. I don't know why, but that's my only thought there. Lee, your thoughts on the Bucs? 9 dates for season ticket holders and or specialty group members, and 1 day for the average Joe who's not a woman or a member of a specialty group.
Not a woman.
Well, they do have their ladies' day, Women of Red, there.
Yeah, I know. I just think it's lousy, and I look at it from a big perspective. The Bucs used to have a fan fest. That was a big thing around here. That was a huge thing. I mean, they'd get a lot of people out. Then they got rid of fan fest, and I remember a high-level executive told me to my face about the fan fest. I said, you're not having fan fest anymore? It was an innocent question like that, you know? And he's like, oh, no, that's what the night practice is for now. Well, they got rid of that, too. More and more and more, the little guy's getting pushed aside. And I know the Bucks get really hacked off at me saying this, but it's basically like they don't care about the unwashed. And the Bucks get actually mad at me for saying that. I'm like, well, you told me where I'm wrong. Tell me where I'm wrong. And, oh, you know, it's fire codes, and if they want to come to practice, they have to, you know, we want to make sure they go inside. Well, that was never a problem for years before, and they said, oh, we can't let more people than at a practice than what the Glazer shed can hold. They don't say Glazer shed, I say that. And I'm like, well, that's easy to get around. The people that the season ticket holders, they get a little, one of these little plastic wristbands. You got a wristband on, you get to go inside. Don't have a wristband on, go home. I mean, if it rains. And it's not rocket science. And that just shows me how little, and they'll argue with me all day long. And I'm like, well, the proof's in the pudding. It's just how little they don't care about Joe Sixpack, about the same fans who came out to all their games and supported them through thick and thin when they were a trash team. I'm sorry, trash team. You had the worst home record in the NFC since Chucky left. And the people that supported them through thick and thin, once they started winning, they got tossed aside. And I just think that's lousy. I'm not saying open up every practice. If you have maybe a half dozen where Joe Schmo can come out there, watch practice, doesn't have access to the Glazer shed if it starts raining. Or actually have a night practice. Like, well, if you have night practice, that means you have no practice because it's going to rain. Didn't you build an indoor practice facility? You can't move the practice inside if it rains? Hello? Every excuse they come up with falls flat. And that's what it is, an excuse. They want you to buy their respect. If you buy their respect, they love you. If you can't afford to buy their respect, you're eh. And I know I'll get a phone call or a text like, hey, we got to have a chat. You got to come to the principal's office. But I want the Bucks to prove where I'm wrong.
You know, it's tough, Steve. It's tough to argue against the Kemper. I think the Bucks are being a little short-sighted. To me, throwing that last practice to the general public is like saying, hey, wait a minute. Look, we respect, our dyed-in-the-wool fans. They're trying to have it both ways. I think it's a little too short, too late. I'm not buying it. Other teams are opening up practices, 8, 9, 10 practices to the general public. We're going to keep pushing this issue, Steve, because that's what we do. We look out for the average Bucks fan, the diehard. That's who we cater to, and we're not going to stop.
Either you want the fans there or you don't, and they have dates with no fans at all, and it just doesn't make a lot of sense. I mean, they have the ability to put the fans there. For some reason, they don't want them. One would think it's a great way to grow customers and build experiences of fans and young people who, you know, just bonding and all that. But that's the deal. Lee, I got to ask you this because I want to be a little fair to the Bucks. You put it in your column, the scathing rant that you had there on the Bucks, and, you know, I know you mentioned it here. But has anybody called you or texted you and, you know, called you to the principal's office, like you said? Because if they haven't, you know, it's fair to say they haven't done that.
Yet.
Okay. That's on hold.
Yes, I'm expecting it.
People are on vacation, Steve. They're on vacation.
July.
All right. Well, we had to go on the watch there. All right, Sage, look, I'm going to throw you out of here with asking you about what you've been ranting about special teams. I know they're in your craw. You wrote your column about that. What do you want to say to the people?
Well, I'll make it short, and it's not sweet, short and sour. Lee knows my guy, Rick Goslin. I used to work with him way back when. There aren't many pro football writers that are more respected than Rick Goslin. He does an annual special teams thing. And I just went through it, you know, over the last 10 years. 10 years. A decade, Lee. And he's got all these categories, and he adds them all up and, you know, kind of annually ranks, you know, teams, how they do on special teams. Lee, even me, who is not easily shocked, was shocked about how poorly the Bucks have fared for a freaking decade. 5 head coaches going back to Schiano. 5. Jason Light drafting this guy, drafting this guy. Oh, special teams, coverage, kickoff returns, kicker, punter, Nothing changes, Lee. They're not good at it. How about getting a little better this year? How about it?
Hey, Ira, did Gosselin put out his 2022 rankings yet?
Of course he did.
I didn't see that. Where did the Bucks check in last season?
Number 30, Steve. Number 30.
That's sort of where they've been hanging out in the neighborhood of. That's interesting. You know, and I got to say, Ira, perhaps that number is very reflective, or the 10 years you're talking about is very reflective of the general manager. I mean, this is his 10th season coming up.
I agree.
If you're not good for that long, there's got to be some sort of X factor there. We'll see. Joe Tryon-Chayinka may go back to special teams this year. He was good at it in 2021. They didn't dare use him there last year for risk of injury, but I think we might see him there again. All right, Ira.
Remember a couple of years ago the Bucks drafted a guy and Jason Light crowed about him. And he was actually pretty good at special teams. Grant Stewart, remember that?
Yep.
And Light on and on and on. What a stalwart he's going to be on special teams. He's going to be like a decades-long player. And he referenced some guys with the Dolphins that Light scouted. And the guy was damn good at special teams. And Light just crowed about this guy. And Light wasn't exactly wrong. And a year later, they trade him.
Yeah. Steve, remember Ryan Smith? Couldn't cover anybody, but he was a good special teamer. Gone.
Yes, but he left as a free agent. He left as a free agent.
Yeah.
Yeah, then they brought him back, and he didn't get anything done. He just lost it. All right, Ira Sage, we will wish you a safe and happy 4th of July, and we will see you after that. I know you got some big plans, and say goodbye to your people.
All right, guys. I wish everybody a happy, healthy 4th. Don't be watching these shows with Ryan Seacrest and Anderson Cooper. We don't need any of that nonsense. Just
those two guys together.
Hug your family. Tell them that you love them. And training camp. It's getting close, Lee. Getting close.